Hi, hey everybody. So this is your good friend Turtle, and I'm here with a special guest. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Beard, also known as the Great Sage equal to Kevin, thanks to Discord moderator Jaso.
Is that how we're pronouncing it?
Yes.
Oh shit, Jesus! All right, well, wonderful. Okay, so hi, Beard, welcome. You've wanted to be on the pod for a while.
Yes, I love attention.
You do. All right. Okay. Well, what kind of attention are we looking to garner here?
All attention is good attention, you know?
Jesus, that doesn't that that doesn't seem like a very healthy relationship to have with the dungeon.
It's really not.
Okay. And that's it.
That is pretty much it.
That's your comment on that.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. All right, well, wonderful. Well, so I had you on because I had something that I had like an intuition. I had an idea for a topic, and I was like, I feel like Mirabu would be a good choice for this. And when I brought it up to you I was gratified to see that like you what's it called? I that seemed to be correct because you sort of vibed with it, right? So yeah, so what's it called? Line of discussion I wanted to follow was what's it called? Was I wanted to start with the idea of like favorite. So to preface this, so I I don't know, beard, how do I get into this?
All right, so the concept of favorites,
Specifically, the idea of favorite vis-a-vis like art. So I've
right.
been thinking about like the relationship that people have with art. There's this question that's a very common question. People ask you, what's your favorite book? Right? What's your favorite movie? What's your favorite blank? The thing about that question for me, is that like I don't really have a favorite blank typically, because that seemed like sort of a weird relationship to have with art.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Do you agree with that idea?
I would definitely like if you asked me what my favorite something is, I could probably give you an answer, but that answer would change probably multiple times a day, just depending on what I'm feeling at the time.
Multiple times a day, my goodness. That's a
That
lot.
depends on what you're asking.
Fair enough. All
Some
right. Okay.
things are more set.
Well, I'd be interested in that. So give me an example of something set.
So something set like if I had to if you said what is your favorite game and I mean there's a lot to get into there as far as favorite as in what was the most enjoyable or whatever, but if you asked me my favorite game I'd probably say Dark Souls, for example.
I see. Why is that?
So while it's not the most perfect game, and it's not the game that excels in any like a certain particular aspects. It's just the I guess it would be my experience with it.
Okay.
It came at a time where, up till then, my games had consisted of, stuff like World of Warcraft or emulated like SNES platformers like Mario and that. And I feel like Dark Souls was my first introduction to like, I guess the broader concept of gaming. I don't know, but it
Okay. Well, here's something. So I was thinking about this, I was thinking about this in preparation for our talk, and the thing about games is the game is a form. Well, okay, so I there's a couple ways into this, and I'm gonna jump around a little bit. So I knew someone once, by some metrics we were very close, at one point, who was the kind of person who had a very they specifically was literature, it was books. They really loved books. You know, they loved them, and that, you know, and they had the same relationship with books that I guess like a connoisseur might with wine. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. You know, and that always seemed very weird to me. You know, but the thing about this person, you know, as whatever, you know, and I'm not sure exactly how to put my finger on why that's weird, but, you know, this person ended up going into publishing, you know, like they work for a publisher, like, you know, like publishing books mm-hmm. and stuff, you know, and the sense that I get is that was a very good fit for them, you know, you know, so the thing about games, video games in particular, is that it seems to me to be a very commercial form.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. You know, it's sort of like an almost inherently commercial form, I want to say. I might be wrong. You can push back.
It really depends. You do get like more independent games, but, you know, at the end of the day, those are still motivated or at least limited by money.
It's different, you know, it's sort of like film, although, you know, again, film is, you know, like, so, okay. So categories of art, you know, like, so there's art that you can make in your basement, right?
Right.
Right. You know, like in literature, especially poetry, you know, but like literature, like, you know, like is often one of those, you know, painting, you know, you can just paint a picture in your basement, you know, in your underwear, whatever, nobody can stop you, you know.
Right.
Then there, you know, music, you know, you can write and whatever music, you know, by yourself. But once you start to, but movies, for example, like a movie requires hundreds of people acting in concert.
Right.
You know, like typically, you know, like, you know, there are some exceptions, but yeah, you know, even the smallest film requires, like, it typically requires a group of people, you know, and video games seem to have that sort of thing going on too, right? Which is like, you know, like typically, like, you know, like most video games require at least a couple people, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of labor involved as well, across multiple people usually.
Yeah, and so necessarily, you know, because, you know, in the modern world, it must be a marriage of art and business, you know, in a way that, like, you know, like, you know, a painting isn't necessarily, right?
Right.
You know, cavemen painted on walls, right? You know, like they, you know, they had no concept of, like, you know, a higher, or like, you know, selling art and exactly. Right.
Right.
You know, but there's this idea of art as something to be, as a commodity, I guess is what I'm saying. You know, when I'm like circling around, like, you know, like art, like, you know, like, oh, you enjoy it, blah blah. I guess what I'm saying is our art as a commodity. Right.
Yeah.
You know. That's, you know, and so when you are asking, I think, like when someone asks you, like, you know, what is your favorite blank, you know, they're asking, I feel like, you know, about your consumer preferences.
Right. It is a bit of a weird relation when you phrase it like that. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. You go on. You're saying
it's like difficult to think about because you have to evaluate these things, I guess, in like relative terms, not only to, I guess, other things of their medium, but I don't even know where to continue with that.
You're good. The difficulty is one of valuation.
Right.
You know, you're asking what value does this thing have? You know, I remember, gosh, there was, what's it called? There was a conversation a long time ago on the Discord. Someone, I'm not going to call anyone out because, like, we were having a conversation, but someone said something, or we were talking about the concept of value, you know, the concept of value, and all. Do you mind if I rehash a conversation that was had?
Go ahead.
All right, great. So stop me if you've heard this one, or if you haven't heard this one, you know, feel free to ask questions or whatever. But so a friend of mine, once upon a time, did this whole project based on love poetry and the Icelandic sagas. Do you remember? Is this news to you?
Not ringing any bells. So yeah.
Great. Great. Wonderful. All right. Okay. So some of our listeners, this might be repeat, but here we go. So basically, this friend of mine, who's recently transitioned. So they use they, them pronouns. I got to remember. But what's it called? But they wrote this thing that, yes, there was an exploration of the love poetry of a specific love poet, Marvell, I believe, vis-a-vis the Icelandic sagas. So the Icelandic sagas are a Viking historical document, right? Right. And basically what they are is a list of like legal documents, like their transgressions and the price that was paid, like financially, for those transgressions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Okay. So basically there's a quirk in the Icelandic legal system, or the Viking legal system, right? Mm-hmm. It goes something like this. If Beard, you know, you injure me, right? And in injuring me, you deprive me of the use of my right hand.
Right.
Okay. All right. I can sue you, right? I can sue you for damages, up to and including the use of your right hand. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So if I sue you, and you can't provide me with financial,
recompense.
Yeah, thank you. Compensation to my satisfaction. I can ask the court to, in lieu of taking any money from you, I can ask the court to just take your right hand.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, right. So now all of a sudden, so there's this question, it may seem an abstract question. How much is your right hand worth?
And I guess that would depend on what you do.
Correct. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's a whole question, right?
Yeah.
It's not enough to be like a person's right hand is worth $5,000. You know what I mean? Clearly not. I think would you pay more than $5,000 to keep your right hand?
Absolutely.
Great. Okay. Would you pay like $500 million?
If I could.
Well, there you go. See, yeah, there, there's the whatever. Would you sell your house? Would you ask your parents to sell their house? So on and so forth.
Right.
All of a sudden, these questions of value go from being abstract to visceral.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's no longer like, oh, I just don't know. It's visceral. Like, how much money, will you pay to avoid keeping your right hand? I mean, to avoid having it chopped off.
Right.
So the Icelandic sagas are like full of this, so-and-so lost an eye and he sued and was paid 300 taels of gold or whatever how much is your eye worth? Right. How much is a foot worth? How much, all this shit. Going further, there's the whole concept of like a blood feud, right? So if someone kills your brother, legally you have a right to avenge yourself, right?
Right.
But the guy has a right to like try to pay you blood price, right? So how much money would it take for you to overlook the death of your brother?
Right.
Right. And you could be like, well, it's priceless, but is that true?
Yeah. And then especially with like a society's justice system, you have to go into, they have to define, what's the value of say a warrior's life versus a woodcutter or a tailor or something.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, no, all this stuff is like, is what's it called? Is couched by like, well, you only have so much to give.
Right.
Right. You know, like, you know, you know, like, you know, like you, you know, you're, I'm like, would you give $500 million to keep your hand? You're like, if I had that much, yeah, sure.
Right.
You know, again, like, you know, but like, yeah, but you know, so, you know, more reasonable, whatever. It's like, you know, would you give $500,000? You know, would you go into debt to keep your hand?
Right.
You know, so on and so forth. You know, would you give up your car, ride a bicycle the rest of your life? You know, all this stuff, you know. Anyways, so the reason that my friend crossed the Icelandic sagas thing with the love poetry thing was that, like, you know, so the thing about a lot of love poetry is that love poetry has a lot of comparisons in it. You know, especially the work of Andrew Marvell or whatever, but like, you know, it's like, you know, well, you know, you're more precious than diamonds. Right?
I get you, yeah, yeah.
Well, how much more precious? Right, you know, once you introduce that kind of comparison, you can actually start thinking about finance.
Hmm.
Right, you know, like how much is your love financially worth to you? Does that make sense? You know.
Yeah, it's definitely more of an abstract. Yeah.
Sure, but again, this is about making the abstract visceral, you know, or the
relationship
relationship between the abstract and the visceral. Does that make sense? You know,
yeah,
which is weird. You know, it's a weird thing because on a certain level, like, you know, money is made up, you know, and like isn't real, and like your hand is, you know.
Right.
On the other hand, like, you know, anyways, you know, so there's a lot going on here. Why do I bring this up? Because you know, so when you talked about your the Dark Souls game, right?
Right.
Right, you know, talk about, you know, you're like, well, you know, it's about the experience that I had. Does that make sense? Yeah, you had the experience there, you know, and you're talking about, like, you know, an experience, I think, and I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on this. I feel like an experience is a visceral thing, in so much that a visceral happens to an experience, like, happens to you, like, in your body, right?
Right.
Yeah, you know, again, like, you know, and that's the, and so, you know, art, you know, you experience art. Art does something to you, right?
Right, and that experience can definitely vary based on, you know, would you feel the same way if you had not had a previous experience in your life, or
sure, yeah,
yeah.
No, go on, please. I'm listening.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, it's okay if you're done. Like, you're done.
yeah. Well, we can maybe go back to that later, but yeah.
Cool. Well, did you have a specific experience in mind?
Not really. Like, okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
All right. Yeah. You know. So this idea of, you know, a favorite, you know, piece of art, you know, is it's sort of a strange one, and you know, and okay, how do I all right, so here you, hold on, I made a note here, I sent it to you, Philosophilia. All right, so here's something else, I'm bringing this in, we're jumping around, like I said, so philosophy, so philosophy, etymology, you know what etymology is, of course.
Yeah.
What's etymology?
I believe it has to do with language.
Yeah,
I might be wrong. Okay,
no, you're good. No, you're right. You're perfect. It's what's it called? It's the you go back to, like, the roots of words and stuff.
Yes.
Exactly. Okay. So etymologically, philosophy, the idea of philosophy, right? My Greek's not very good, but like, what's it called? Like, you know, so philo, right, is liking something, right? You know, and sophy is wisdom.
Right.
So philosophy is like loving wisdom. Right. In the same way that, like, pedophilia is like loving pedo, which is children.
Mm-hmm. Interesting example, but yeah.
Well, you get it. It's compound words. Yeah. You're a bibliophile. You love books.
Yeah.
Got it. All right. Well, there you go. Anyways, sorry. Well, shit. we're going to jail now, Beard. Just you and me, baby. Here we go. And we're gonna die in jail because we're pedophiles.
Don't bring me into this.
Beard, let the record show. Let the listeners of the Ruby Discord show that Beard is going down with me. Right?
I trust you to break us out.
Oh, Well, that's nice. I wouldn't. I would not. But I'm heartened by your faith in me. Well, anyways, so what's it called? So, my girlfriend, who she's very smart, has like a master's in philosophy and whatever. But she told me a story once. One of her professors or something said something about. They were like, well, you know, like a lot of what you know, people call philosophy, which is, you know, the love of wisdom, right? You know, etymologically, like you break down the words, right. He says really philosophilia, right? You know,
right.
Which is to say the love of wisdom.
Right.
Right. You know, like Plato or somebody, like, you know, and I he's interested in the truth. He's really trying to, you know, truth shit. Right. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know? But like someone like, there are all these conservative comics who like read Plato, you know, and then they probably don't love the truth so much as they love, you know, they love Plato.
Right.
The philosophilia. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get it.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, so thinking about this, like this idea, right. There's the love of something and there's the love of something. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, like, you know, like you're, if you're, you know, like you can love a video game, right, you know, but then there's like another level of remove where like you love to love video games.
Right, right. You love to have your specific interest in something or some specific person.
Or like an identity or something, right? Like the game.
Right.
Thing, right. You know, the gamer thing, you know, I think about this in like relationship to like, so for some reason, the one that jumps out on me is Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Especially like modern Star Wars, right? You know, I guess post prequels, you know, all that stuff since Disney bought it, right?
You right. Know?
So I think I saw the movies, but I don't remember them very well. But like they weren't very good, right? We agree on that they weren't very good or interesting.
I didn't see them, but at the same time, from everything I've heard, yeah, probably agree with that.
Yeah. Okay. Great. All right. So you know, but like you know, and I don't want to get into whatever about, but like you know, but like the thing about like okay, so what's it called? So on the one hand, you have like loving a movie, right, or something, right?
Right.
You love movie. You love art. You love this thing. You know, and then the next level is like you love loving that thing, right? You know, which I guess right. I sort of think of as like fandom culture. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely an increasingly common, like, I don't know if it's an issue necessarily, but there's this, it seems like people just feel a need to, well, identify with an identity, and they just you know, they'll participate in whatever communities are out there. They'll buy merchandise for the sake of having merchandise related to
they love loving the thing.
Right
Yeah. No, and so this is sort of what I'm thinking about. Like Marvel movies, for example, right?
Yeah.
But you know, like the thing about Marvel movies is that, like, you know, like they're very samey, you know, like there are a few outliers, I guess, you know, that, you know, but they're very samey. They have this formula where, like, you know, a big part of the enjoyment of them is or used to be, maybe this is changing, you know, but like, you know, and you know, the anticipation of what's gonna come, you know what I mean? Like, you know, like, ooh, like, you know, like I saw this thing in the trailer, you know what I mean? Like, you know, I bet the movie's gonna be about this or that, you know, and like,
right,
the excitement, there's a whole experience around the movie that you're having,
right,
you know, and then there's the movie itself, right? But the thing about these movies is there's been like 20 of them. Right, or whatever. I don't know how many probably, right, you know, but like, you know, but each one of them, like, you know, like doesn't have that much cultural impact. Right. Does that make sense? You know, by
absolutely. Yeah. Like the impact is like you said before, art is a commodity. It feels like with them, they're And I don't know if this is the point you were trying to get to or not, but
cool. Let's wander.
Yeah, so I feel like they're increasingly, at least like these Marvel movies are a good example of, you know, when does it stop being art and when does it stop being, I guess, an advertisement? Because aside from these movies having like big budgets that they expect to make the money back on, you know, with theater viewings and that, they've also got, you know, loads of merchandise, toys.
You know what? It's funny that you're like, I don't know if we're going. That's exactly where I was going. Because here's the thing about I have a sort of thing here, right? You know, here's a formulation I'm working on, and I want your input on it, maybe your help with it if you like. But whatever is like, so I think the thing that like, you know, that like, for example, Disney with like Disney looking at Star Wars, right? So Star Wars is a movie, or it's a couple blockbusters, you know, that come out like the 70s and 80s and shit, and people watch them and have an experience with these movies,
right,
you know, and people love these fucking movies, right, you know, like, you know, they
oh yeah,
it captures their imaginations, you know what I mean? Like, you know, they have like this whole fucking experience with them, and you know, and Disney's interest in that is, you know, Disney doesn't really care about the film, the art or the movie. That, you know, Disney looks at the Disney likes the love of movies.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Right.
Yeah.
They want an audience.
Yeah. They love that you're dressing up as the guy. Right. It doesn't matter to them who the guy is. Right, you know, it might matter to you. It might, or I, you know, at least, you know, in the purest form of this, it should matter to you who the guy you're dressing up as is, right?
Yeah,
he should mean something to you,
right?
You're dressing up as Boba Fett or whoever because you love, I don't know, he's enigmatic, he's cool, he's, you know what I mean, like he doesn't say anything, you know what, you know, but he's, you know, there's something striking or interesting, you know what I mean, about him, and you love that,
right?
You know? Yeah, but you know, but the capitalist whatever is like, you know, it loves the love of it,
right?
Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Right. So. So when I talk about video games being commercial, I think I'm like circling around this a little more, you know, which is that art games exist,
right? Right?
You know, but most of them seem to be something what like I would like, you know, I think the term is like they're walking simulators.
Yeah, to a degree. There's definitely like games that I would say are art games that are also more directly video games. And there's direct video games that I would say are art. It'd be like a whole argument, like going, you know, what is the purpose of you know, what is the intent, I guess.
Well, I will give some examples. Flesh out that argument. I'd like to hear that.
So, God, I think Okami is a really good example for this. Which
I played Okami actually. So there you go. That's something I'm familiar with. Good. Go on.
Yeah. So, the main person behind it, Hideki Kamiya, is also known for like the Devil May Cry and the first Devil May Cry, the Bayonetta games and all that. And I've never played any of them. Yeah, so he's the main director behind it. His goal is clearly, you know, to make a game that is flashy, but I guess kind of playing in a certain way. But then for Okami in particular, there's also a lot of visuals behind it, as I'm sure you're aware.
It's beautiful. It's a beautiful, beautiful game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Where was I going with this thought? But it's like, that's a game that is at its core, you know, very similar to these other games that he's made, which while not, they're still flashy, but they're not, I guess, as visually intended to be artistic as Okami is.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's mm-hmm. true. That is, I hadn't thought about that. That is interesting. No, I yeah, you're right. You know, Okami is visually beautiful in a way that yeah. No, I hear you. That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, like
I'm just absorbing this idea.
Yeah, it's like the main guy's intention is to make, you know, like, you've got your combo system, you've got, you know, all your special attacks and all that, and that's kind of what most of his games kind of go for. But again, none of them really go as hard into the artistic aspect as Okami does, for example.
Yeah, that's true, you know, and yeah, and Okami's sort of a weird, it's sort of a brawler mechanically, right?
Right.
It's got like a Zelda thing going on.
Kind of, yeah. I guess the common term for them would be like a character action game, where the focus is just on your character, like, taking actions, I guess, like, you've got your combos, you can do really intricate and stylish combos. Like, you can, there's a lot you can do with the system, yeah, and that's what the focus is on.
And the whole drawing mechanic.
Right.
Yeah. That is interesting. I need to sort of incorporate that. So who is this guy? You know, so Okami never got a sequel, right?
There was Okami Den for the DS.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how involved Kamiya was in that or anything.
Yeah.
Because by that point, Clover Studios had pretty much dissolved. Mm-hmm. So I can't remember who the official developer was on that or really anything about it. But it did get that. It didn't feel like it quite had the heart that Okami did. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure how much involvement the original team had in that.
Well, thank you for that. I need to think about that.
Mm-hmm.
I used to have like a mentor, and when someone would say something like that, so something interesting, and they'd be like, "I need to go lay down."
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm like,
I need to go lay down. Think about that.
Yeah. Yeah, so your drawing attacks in Okami, like in another game similar to that, would be like doing a specific button input or something. Like it's just kind of a replacement for getting to the same goal, I guess, in his formula.
Sure, but I feel like the drawing thing was like very important to the
a
lot of times I remember playing, I'm like, this is, the drawing is frustrating. You know, or it can't be, you know, but like, you know, like, you have to like improve your fucking calligraphy to like play this fucking game, you know. But that seems to be the idea,
right?
There's an importance to this thing, you know, even though it would have maybe been more like, you know, commercially whatever, or more accessible,
right,
you know, to do this thing. Yeah, you know, well, see, again, and then this is sort of part, you know, the market hates shit like that. You know,
right,
you know, the market, like, you know, like hates things like that, you know. You know, so valuation, you know, value, capital, you know, like all sorts of stuff, like, you know, the abstract and the visceral. You know, like, do you see what I'm driving at?
Yeah. No, I get the point you're going towards.
Well,
here.
Well then help me out. What am I driving at? Help me put it into words.
So let's see. So we're kind of driving it. So we're talking about the commercialization of art, I guess, is like the general overarching idea here, like,
and we're interested in it, you know, as, you know, as a relationship between the abstract and the visceral,
right,
you know, and in this case, you know, even though it seems weird, you're like, you know, like I think of art as visceral because the experience you have of art is visceral,
Right.
You know, even a video game, like, you know, like Dark, I for example, like, you know, Dark Souls, I think, like, you know, I've never played Dark Souls, but from what I gather, you know, the thing about Dark Souls, that's very frustrating.
Yeah, it's definitely frustration is like one of the main things people will feel going into it, for sure.
Yeah, and you know, and you know, and the joy of it seems to be, you know, this thing is very frustrating and awkward and clunky, and so when you finally make it work, right? Like,
right.
there's immense satisfaction, right?
Right. And I wouldn't even say it's clunky. It's it's like it flows really well once you get it. The hard part is like getting there and understanding, you know, how the mechanics work, and just understanding the design of the game beyond that as well, like your mechanics and how it interacts with everything. It's a very interesting experience to me. Because at the time it was so unlike a lot of games that are out there. You know, there's other games absolutely that are like Dark Souls. They made plenty of games with a kind of similar feeling to it in the past.
You know what's funny is, like, as you're describing this, you know what the game that I think of is?
What's that?
The first Mario Brothers.
Hmm.
You know,
yeah,
you know, yeah, like, you know, like, you know, because that's what playing the original Mario Brothers was like. You know, you're fucking trying to, like, you know, like get Mario to jump over the fucking Goomba or whatever, you know, and it was hard.
Right. Yeah. No, it's like, looking at it now, it doesn't seem like anything special, but at the time it's like very unique. Like it's precision movement. It's very punishing as well.
Yeah, yeah. People now, like, you know, like they've had to go to, you know, that such old hat, people have had to go to, like, to replicate that original Mario experience, you know, the experience of being, like, you know, a child or something, like, you know, and trying to play Mario for the first time. You know, there's like I'm aware of this thing called Mario Maker, you know, and people make like punishing, insanely ridiculous levels. You know, but like it seems to me to be in the pursuit of that, you know, you're chasing the dragon of that first experience.
Yeah, yeah, it's like one of the most, like, simple pleasures you can have as a person is just getting past an obstacle, like overcoming something.
Yeah. My girlfriend would call that a mastery activity. Which I believe is like a psychological term, you know. But and they're fundamental. I think there's like a theory of what's it, like, psychology, like so mastery activities are one of the things that's fundamental to, like, being a functioning person.
Right.
Right. You know, like, you know, like you have to, like once a day you've got to, like, master, you've got to overcome an obstacle and be like, yeah, I did that. You know what I mean? Like, you know, or else you go insane.
Yeah. And I would say it's even at, like, the very core of, I guess, humanity as a whole, because, like, you know, back Stone Age wise, you know, what is part of the reason, like, people were, you know, working stone and making tools and that, clearly they would have gotten some enjoyment out of that, I think.
I hear you. I'm not really into evolutionary psychology.
Fair enough. I don't know jack shit about it. So,
well, neither do you know. Like, I don't know what a person like that, you know, but I do buy the idea that, like, there are just things that are forever.
Right.
Right. You know, like bread.
Yeah.
You know, bread means pretty similar to the same thing it did now that it did, like, you know, a couple thousand years ago.
Yeah.
You know, it's bread. You know,
yeah.
Your experience of it, you know, is similar to that experience, you know.
Yeah.
Because your experience of hunger is, you know, you still get hungry in the same way. Like, you know, if we ever, I want to talk about things that are forever, where, like, you know, like there are just, like, and I, you know, food's one of them. Like, you know, like if there are ever people, you know, who like, you know, who like don't like, you know, prepare food and like eat and stuff, like, you know, they don't do that, you know, they won't be recognizable to us as people.
Right.
Right. You know, that's something everybody has in common. You know, we all prepare food. We all eat, we all get hungry.
Right.
It's forever. You know, but no, I like that. Yeah. That idea. Yeah. So, but yes, this is the thing you've described, you know, which is, that's interesting to me. That's fundamental to the game. It's very interesting. There's a guy, I've mentioned him before. He makes these very intentionally difficult games. I think Quap is one of them. You know, Quap.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. You know the guy I'm talking about?
I don't know specifically him, but I do know Quap.
Yes. Quap, which is like, you know, I believe the term a friend of mine told me is fumble core.
That's a good way to describe it. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and he makes games exclusively in that genre. Hmm. There's a game of him I saw. It's called Get Over It.
Yeah, Bennett Foddy. I didn't know he made Quap.
That's okay. Him. Yeah, that's, I'm pretty sure that's him. You know,
that would make sense. Yeah. It's a kind of similar vein.
Yes. Yeah. He makes these games, and it's interesting. Yeah. So he's very much, I guess, in conversation with this thing that you've advanced, this idea of what a game is.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. That's an interesting thing. Hmm. You know, Beer, I appreciate that. You know, that sort of is the appeal of a game as opposed to another type of genre or something, right?
Right. It's the idea of being able to master a skill or a set of skills or something, like even outside of video games, like chess, you know, the idea of gradually understanding it better and being better at it, just like understanding specific, I guess, rule set kind of, and getting better at it.
That's beautiful. That's a beautiful idea. I like that. Yeah. You know, and so, you know, well, so what's it called? So the thing about Get Over It in particular, did you beat Get Over It?
I never played it.
Okay. All right. So there's a thing. So, I mean, this is known, but like, you know, and I've never played nor beaten it, because it's not my style. Thank you. Right. You know, but like, you know, but so whatever, Get Over It. And this is interesting, you know, so you're doing, so Get Over It, for those who don't know, is you're a guy in a barrel, right? Or is this right?
Yeah. You're like in a pot. Yeah.
Yeah. You have a hammer, you know, and the only thing you can do is swing the hammer. Right. And you've got to swing the hammer to like, you know, which is a very, like, it's not a great tool for the thing you're about. But you're supposed to climb a mountain, you know, with this hammer.
Right.
You know, and as you do it, you know, the voiceover, like, talks to you.
Right. Yeah.
You know? And when you get to the top, you know, the guy's like, please don't reveal what, you know, is at the end of this game.
Right.
Okay. I'm going to do it. All right. Are you ready for Get Over It spoilers?
Oh, you better not let Bennett Foddy know.
Okay. Well, I'm pretty sure he's not a listener, but the whatever it is, like, you know, so the thing at the end is, it's an IRC chat. Mm-hmm. It's an IRC chat, like, exclusive to people who have beaten the game.
Right.
Yeah. You know, the idea being, like, you know, that, like, you've all come through this experience.
Right. Yeah, you've had the same experience, but maybe not experienced it in the same way, among other things.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, yes. And the idea, yeah, a little community. Yeah. You know, anyways, Where am I? Whatevering, you know. Capital and art and, you know, the Star Wars thing, like, you know, which we were talking, you know, which we started talking about, you know, Disney, you know, so Disney made some Star Wars movies recently, right? You know, but they were dog shit. They were bad movies. whatever else is true about them, right? What didn't happen was a generation of people, you know, like saw these movies and like had their imagination, you know, and were captured by their, you know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, nobody's imagination was captured by this movie, by these movies. Right. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like if the rest of the, you know, if the original movies didn't exist, you know, like, you know, nobody would be dressing up as this shit.
Right.
Right. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it would, you know, it would. Yeah. And so, I don't know. So what's it called? So, what is it? What am I trying to, whatever? But however, there are a bunch of people who, despite that, like are really invested in the movies being good.
Right.
Same as Marvel.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. You know, so there are people who are like, who are so invested in, you know, but they seem to be invested in the loving, you know, there's a group of people who for some reason keep insisting that Marvel movies are on par with like real movies.
Yeah, it's a very bizarre phenomenon. I don't quite know how to.
Okay, well, I'm trying to put my finger on something. I want your take on my take.
Okay.
Okay. You know, so what seems to be happening is that, like, you know, they love I brought the philosophilia thing.
Right.
You know, it's a love of loving something.
Right.
Does that make sense? You know what I mean? Like, you know, like, you know, like they don't love movies. Right. Anybody who loved movies would not be doing this.
Right.
Right. You know, if you're here for the movies are bad or mediocre or unworthy of your love.
Right.
But the goal seems to be like, you know, the love of movies. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, like, you know, like you want to be a cinephile. Without actually having to love movies,
right?
How does that seem to you?
Yeah, I get what you're going for, but I wouldn't even say they want to be like a cinephile. It's very weird with this kind of thing, and I don't quite know what the driving force is. They want to love something, but it's the question of, I guess, why they want to, you know, these things are advertised to hell. Do they want to love it because they've been told to love it by advertising? Do they want to love it because, like, well, Star Wars is a good example. There's a well-established community of it.
Star Wars is my example because it's so strange, you know, for example, there's a Ghostbusters like thing that movie just came out or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, I was watching like the Red Letter Media guys or whatever talk about it, you know, and it's weird because like people love Ghostbusters, you know what I mean? Like, you know, but if you love Ghostbusters, you're not going to like this movie. Does that make sense? Yeah. This movie nothing to do with Ghostbusters. You know, it's the love of, does that make sense? The love of loving Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
You know, like that, and it's just it's so I don't know, you know. And so, you know, there's this question of like, you know, like what's your favorite blank, right?
Right.
And I guess the question we're circling around with here is like, you know, like you know, like that's a question that like a person in, you know, in that whatever, they'd be able to say instantly, right?
Right.
Right. You know, like, oh, my favorite movie is, you know, my favorite movies are blank, this, this, and this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. Right?
Yeah.
All right. You say something.
Well, I'm just thinking, like, I guess as we go with the discussion, it's one of the thoughts that's, like, in the back of my mind here with all this is, I guess, when does art stop being art and become a product, you know?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, that's interesting. Or what is the relationship of art, like to being a commodity and stuff?
Yeah. And I think movies are a very good example of this because, you've got, again, with Star Wars, you've got, the director George Lucas, so who's the artist in Star Wars?
Right.
Is it George Lucas? He's the director, he's got the vision. Are the actors artists? Are, the special effects guys, are they artists? I guess whose art is it? Because with
Right.
the director, all these other people that you could argue are artists, they're basically his tools
Right.
in a way.
No, it's true. No, I mean my I mean so my formulation this is blunt, which is that I'm sort of like ethically opposed to movies on a certain level because I feel like movies require slavery.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean IATSE just went on big strike, because those production people are so brutalized. And
Right.
the reason that all Hollywood unions are as strong as they are, which can seem ridiculous, but it's because union, they're illogical, but all that union should exist because those people were so abused,
Yeah.
because film requires slavery.
It really does.
It requires people, who aren't, you're not having your own thoughts. You're not, you know what I mean? You have to execute, according to the will and vision, one or two people get to have thoughts.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
And,
you're again, your tools in an
yeah.
artist's vision, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, and so one of the reasons I'm like ethically opposed, so yeah, so like in terms of art, I'm like sort of opposed to film, because you're like, who's the artist here? And that question gets easier, or seems to, when you're like looking at like a book, right?
Right.
It seems to get easier when you're looking at a book, or a painting, you know what I mean, like and stuff like that. Because if there's one guy in the room, well, he's probably the artist. Right, so it's probably somewhere in there, right? But when there's 10 people, all of a sudden it becomes different,
Right.
or it might be. But yeah, no, it's a muddled thing, and this sort of gets back to so the thing about the Icelandic sagas, right? Whatever, like you're like, well, I was like, well, how much is your hand worth? And you're like, well, it would depend.
All right.
Right, and that's the thing about value is that it depends. Right, like
Yeah.
who's yeah, like who's the artist? Well, it depends.
Yeah, it's all relative.
Or I don't know if relative is the word.
Yeah,
Forgive me
yeah.
for pushing back. I feel like it's mushy.
Yeah.
Right,
Yeah.
it's like it's mushy. It's the boundaries on it get all mushy.
Right.
Does that make sense? Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because it's hard to pick it apart. You sort of can't pick it apart.
Right, there's a limit to what value can reasonably be, I guess, applied to.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. You can suss it out. Right, you can suss out what the value of it is, but you've only sussed out the value of something very specific,
Right.
right? Like the Icelandic sagas and stuff, every whatever, you've recorded, how much one guy's hand was worth to him.
Right.
Does that make sense? You know what I mean? But they're called the Icelandic sagas. Like there's a lot of them. Right, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And each one is a specific. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
A specific, yeah. And there's sort of really no way to you can't systematize it. Right,
Right.
this value thing. All right, at least not easily or well. you know, and if you do systematize it, you know, what you begin to do is you begin to, like, you know, very quickly run into the boundaries of, like, how that works and how that's good.
Right.
Let me say, yeah, okay. Yeah, you know. And the thing about, like, loving wisdom, like which is a philosophy, right? Which I'm not a philosopher, but you know, but we're taking that because, you know, as an example case, right?
Right.
Is that that's hard. Right? It's very difficult. You know, Nietzsche, I forget, he begins one whatever, but, you know, suppose truth is a woman, you know, what then? You know, which is, well, you know, well, so Nietzsche begins, I forget one of his things, he begins, suppose truth is a woman, what then? Should we not then distrust the opinions of many learned philosophers, being, as they were, very inexpert about women?
Yeah, I get you.
Which is to say, like, you know, the idea that, like, you know, that what is true is, you know, it's a moving target.
Yeah.
You know, or it's alive and it's a complicated, you know, it's does that make sense? You know, and the thing about art, in my opinion, you know, is that art, you know, are really, and art is hard to quantify and stuff because it has this quality to it, you know, this sort of living, you have an experience with it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, the abstract and the visceral. And of course, you know, capitalism like that.
Yeah.
Right. Because what capital wants, you know, is, you know, it wants things that make sense and to it.
Everything needs to have a value, essentially, is one of the bases.
Yes.
Of how it operates. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and those, you know, like, I mean, like, you know, the existence of the stock market, of course, you know, which is, you know, a perpetually, like, you know, churning and, like, you know, and fluctuating, you know, and as has often been observed, like, very, you know, often very irrational,
right?
You know, like, you know, sort of. Collective, you know, agreement of the value of something,
right?
Like it's always, you know, that it's a, yeah, it's I don't know, it's weird,
right? The and then there's, like, economics, which is just an entire system of trying to apply, like, sense to the senseless, essentially.
Sure.
It all gets really muddled.
It does. It gets very muddy. You know. Yeah. It gets very muddy. You know. I think so. So, I mean, this is whatever. This is my, I'm going to editorialize here. My opinion, you know, is that, like, what you have to do is you just have to get in the mud.
Right.
Right, you know, you have to like figure it out. Oh, so in true, like, Ruby Discourse fashion, I began an anecdote like 45 minutes ago and have not and didn't finish it. So let me bring it home a little bit. You know, what's it called? Like, you know, so we got, as I was talking about the Icelandic sagas thing, whatever, you know, mm-hmm. Like, you know, with the question of value and so much, and somebody, I'm not going to say who, said, like, you know, something like, you know, well, like, that just doesn't matter. Right. The question of, like, what things are worth, you know, is all you ask people, you get different answers. It doesn't matter anyway.
Right.
You know? And I said something to him, like, or to them, could have been a woman. You don't know. I don't know. Could have been a non-binary person. We don't know who it was. We're not doxing them. But I said something. I had a very bad reaction to that. That I said something like, you know, like, if you were here right now, I would, like, try to kill you. and I mentioned, I was very upset. And I apologized, of course, you know, but I really do believe in this, like, in this, I really do believe that, like, you know, that it matters what things are worth, right? You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I believe that. I believe that very strongly, that, like, you know, that it really does matter, like, you know, what things are worth, and how you feel, how people feel about, you know, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I know this is probably been a very weird experience, hasn't it?
A bit of one, yeah. You're
sorry.
I don't know. No, it's just like things I don't think about in a specific way that I'm kind of thinking about in that specific way now.
I guess I'm sorry. Shit. Well, I'm sorry. You want to talk about video games?
Although, no, I just wanted to be on a podcast. That's it.
Well, now you've been on a podcast. Was it what you expected?
That's a good question, because I honestly don't know what I expected, really.
Well, have you enjoyed it?
Yes. Oh, yes, absolutely.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'm glad to hear that, at least. I was worried. I'm like, God, this is so weird. Well, you know, so part of this comes back to, like, you know, I dragged poor Ramp into this conversation. I don't know if you're, do you listen to this podcast?
Oh yeah.
Okay. All right. You remember we had a whole thing on neo-moralism?
I vaguely recall it.
All right. Yeah. Well, the this prevailing sort of artistic ethos now, which is that, like, you know, it's a very weird sort of simplistic idea of art, you know, that rejects the idea of non-didactic art. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Which is, you know, now that we've been talking about it, you know, I think what it does, I think, you know, so, you know, you raise such an interesting, you know, the idea of difficulty. You've raised the idea of difficulty. The joy of a game is in its difficulty. That's what you, would you agree with that?
To an extent. Okay. In games, it gets strange, because it gets into questions of why is it difficult? You know, is it?
Yeah, sure.
Is it difficult because, you know, you need to just execute something in a specific way, and, you know, you just failing to execute in that way? Is it difficult because it just, I guess, it's not made in a sensible or logical way? Have you heard the term, like, artificial difficulty before?
Lay it on me.
So, and this all, it's mostly used as just like an insulting term, but the idea of artificial difficulty is just something being difficult for the sake of being difficult. Dark Souls is one of the earliest instances of it that I can think of as, like, people flinging that label around. Mm-hmm. Which I think is unfair in that case, because the mechanics, the gameplay in Dark Souls are very, they're set from the start, and they're very simple. They're very, you're given very simple tools and basically just told to execute. But say something that would be artificially difficult is, let's go back to, you know, the first Mario Brothers. Would you say it would be more difficult to play if the screen were upside down and blurred?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah. Would you say that's difficult? Would you say that's adding difficulty for any real purpose? Or...
Yeah, no, yeah. There's nothing interesting about that kind of difficulty. Yeah.
Right, and that's where that's, I guess, where the distinction would be. You know, is something difficult just because, you know, you're using the same, like, basic mechanics that you've been using for the rest of the game, or is it difficult because suddenly, you know, you die in one hit or something? Like, right. it gets to be unfun at that point, I feel like.
I know. I hear what you're saying. This is, you know, I feel like we've like wandered in the middle of this thicket.
Yeah, definitely.
I see what you're saying. No, it sort of goes back to that thing where like, well, whose art is it?
Yeah, who's the artist? Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, well, what is? Yeah, that's an interesting idea. I appreciate that. Well, you know what? So here's the whatever. But like, so this is nominally a Dominions podcast.
Yeah.
You know, so Jay and I were talking last. I don't know if you heard last episode. You know, but Jay and I were talking about like, you know, about Dominions and about difficulty in Dominions and stuff. You know. And the thing that I think we came to together, you know, was that like, you know, that like, you know, or at least my assertion is like the fun of the difficulty of Dominion is like navigating the mess.
Right.
How do you feel about it? But you know, in light of what you said about difficulty in Dominion, so a difficulty in games and good difficulty or interesting difficulty or and bad or uninteresting difficulty. Right, you know, like, how do you feel about Dominions? What's your experience of that? Talk about that.
So, difficulty in Dominions is, I would say, to an extent, it's fairly simple. I think the biggest issue is just the obfuscation of things, like so many mechanics that just go unexplained. But once you do learn them, usually by getting a completely unexpected battle result and saying
what the fuck happened.
Just going to Discord and saying what was this, that's step 27 of the turn order, dude.
You didn't know that, like, you know, you could kill all your communion slaves like that,
right,
you moron.
It's just one of those things where the biggest difficulty is just how much everything is obfuscated, whether intentionally, whether from just lack of consideration. But I think once you really start to understand everything, it really gets to be very, not very simple, but the difficulty just kind of at that point gets to, you know, figuring out what's optimal in what situation, like five-dimensional rock, paper, scissors in a way.
Okay, yeah, I'm into that. Yeah, one of Nuclear Monkey's old definitions of Dominions was rock, paper, scissors with like a million pieces and a nuclear weapon in the middle labeled blood magic.
Right. I think that's a good way to sum it up.
Yeah. How do you feel about Dominions?
So I love turn-based strategy games. Like, above all else, it's just something I've always enjoyed, because I enjoy having time to think about everything and not needing to instantly react, which I get is part of the difficulty and part of mastering, like, you know, fighting games, for example. Like, part of the mastery is being able to react on a dime to Ryu throwing out a fireball or something in Street Fighter. But for me, I just personally prefer being able to take my time, think things over. I played a lot of Civilization IV before. And a lot of like multiplayer games just played over the course of months. Some of them would go over a year even, which is very similar to Dominions.
Yeah.
And I ended up getting into Dominions 4 as part of that same group.
Mm.
So very, very, very enjoyable to me. I like the aspect of like LPs of games as well. Mm. It's interesting to kind of get that insight into how people think, how people engage with the same game that you have interest in, you know?
And, you know, that's interesting. Yeah, because it's the story of an experience.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that is interesting. You know, I haven't thought about how those things fit together. Did we ever do a Let's Play episode of Movie Discourse?
What's that?
Did this podcast ever do a Let's Play episode?
Not that I can recall.
We Rand and I talked about it at one point, but we never did it. Maybe we should do that. I'll think about it.
Well, I
go on.
I know, like, things like, I think Clown LP has been mentioned.
Yeah, well, we've talked about it, but we've never talked about it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. Well, Beard, thank you for your patience
this evening. Thank you.
We've been talking for well over an hour at this point.
Yeah.
And this is a long episode. I don't know, it's the night before Thanksgiving. We should probably you have to go to bedtime for you, right?
Yeah, probably should be getting to sleep, yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, then we'll close. This has been a sort of difficult conversation on difficulty. I guess. Is that too cute?
I think it's perfect.
Thank you, Beard, but you're the best. Is there anything you'd like to this is your debut talking to the audience? Is there anything you'd like to say or any thoughts you'd like to leave us with? You don't have to, but if you want something, now's the opportunity.
Make me a moderator.
Oh God! Fuck! All right.
That's what we'll end it on.
Well, with that. Yeah, the Bibbert. Hey, so Bibbert, thank you so much for your time. I know this was a little weird. Again, thank you for coming along with it.
It's been a pleasure.
Okay. Well, and to you listeners, thank you all very much. I have been Turtle, and
I have been Beard.
And this has been the Ruby Discourse. Have a lovely night and take care.